This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and today I'm joined by Patrick Smakia, creator of Independ, and Patrick's joining me from Nice in the south of France. Thank you very much for taking time out of your evening, Patrick.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are things in France? I know you're having a bit of a heat wave.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Last week it was pretty hot, but now this is pretty okay.
Can you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, please?
So I'm a software developer, or call it architect or whatever. So working for I started when I was 10, now I'm 44, so it's like 34 years old, writing code with a degree in mathematics and software engineering. And so basically, I had the chance to do a lot of consulting during my career. And there were really recurring problems everywhere I went about code quality, right? And especially about code structure. The bigger the project, the more problem they have maintaining code. And we observe things like this economy of scale. And after having done a lot of C, C++, I got interested in .NET. I think it was very early .NET. It was in 2002. Okay, and in 2004, I got the idea of the product Independ for .NET developer, okay, which is basically a tool that will help, that is helping developers to write better .NET code. And it's especially focused on the application. Like if you have a large application or even a smaller, but especially a large one, Independ will tell you a lot of things about the code structure, and it can digest a lot of things like code coverage and have a baseline system or a trending system. And one thing important to underline is that at this point, people tell me that usually they are using like things like Rosin analyzers or maybe ReSharper. And one point important to underline is that Independ is not doing the exact same of analysis. It won't tell you about, like, for example, a potentially new reference, okay? But it can tell you more about like things like solid principle, okay? About code structuring, about here the type where it used to be 100% covered in the baseline, but it's not covered anymore. Okay, so it's a good complement to the Roslyn analyzer and all the good things we have nowadays in the modern Visual Studio. Okay, and there are many other features, like including a lot of code visualization, like you have dependency graph or dependency matrix. Okay, because I always believe that visualization is very important for large chunk of data, and the code base is a quite large chunk of data. And something very unique to Independ is the code querying, right? So Independ basically considers the code as data, okay? The same way like a database, like a relational database, for example. And the same way you are using a SQL to query a relational database, okay, you can use the Independ, what we call a code query link or CQ link. Okay, so basically you are using a C# link upon a custom API. Okay, and this way you can write code query. And what is interesting is actually this code query system is really the backbone of Independ. So it's used, for example, to write rule. Like, for example, you can write something like from m in methods where m dot complexity higher than, let's say, like 30, for example, and select method. Okay. And here we have a very simple query, okay, that we can transform into a rule with some sort of precondition. And then every match of this query will be an issue reported, for example. And that's interesting because this this query system is used for anything. So there is a lot of query generation. For example, there is a world search system, like you can search by name or by popularity or by coverage or whatever. And under the hood, some code query are generated, okay, to help you
Patrick,
quickly.
may I interrupt you? We've made an episode about independent in the past, episode number 74, and we've covered, I think, most of this stuff. So I'd prefer to refer people back to that one if they want to find out about, the core features of independent. What I'd like to kind of talk about is, it was 2 years ago we made that episode. What have you added in the past 2 years that would be of interest to people?
So we are working a lot on improving the product. Okay, we invest a lot of info. So recently we added a new edition, a new SKU, okay, about the Azure DevOps. Okay, so now you can have NDPEN into your Azure DevOps hub. Okay. And that's pretty cool because this way, now with the 3 edition, we are covering NDPEN is everywhere the .NET developer is. First is with the SKU, developer is inside Visual Studio or even as a standalone. With the build machine SKU, it's inside your build process, no matter you're using Jenkins, for example, AppVeo or whatever. Okay, and now Azure DevOps is becoming quite prominent in the .NET development sphere. Okay, and now we are also there. Okay, we also worked a lot to simplify the project recently. A recurrent feedback we get is that the product is a bit complex, especially to get started with. So we have been working hard on the user interface. Okay, and we still have a lot of plan to improve it. We have also made a series of walkthrough videos for each part of the product, which is pretty important. We had also the support for suppressed message attributes. Okay, so for example, like the Roslyn analyzer, when you get an issue that you don't really consider an issue, you can use this attribute. So now it's the same with NDPEN. In the UE part, we also have support for the black team. The black team, which is pretty important because a lot of developer, I think it's 60% of developers are using black team support in Visual Studio. And so the ecosystem around the .NET is evolving a lot, and we try hard to support everything. So of course now we support Visual Studio 2019, .NET Core 3. Okay, that's still in that is not yet RTM. We support a better understanding of Visual Studio solution and project, so this way you can directly reference solution and not just a bunch of assembly. This is pretty important if someone is adding or suppressing a project from a solution, and NDPEN knows now and NDPEN knows about it.
You
We also
mentioned
added,
you were mentioning
sorry.
the Azure CI/CD or DevOps. What about if I'm deploying my .NET in AWS? Does independent help me with that one?
AWS, no, we don't have support yet for that.
Okay. Or if I'm if within Azure, if I'm deploying to containers, does that impact you in any way?
Not really, because the primary source of independent analysis is everything you get at the debug time, right? So there is the assembly, the PDP you get at debug time, the source code, of course. And then you can also analyze the code coverage, okay? And so all this data you get it at debug time, so it's not very it's very important to underline that it's a static analyzer, okay? It refers to static data, contrary to runtime analyzer, like for example a profiler, memory profiler, performance profiler, whose data is runtime data. So the way you deploy is not really impacting independent.
Can I put if I'm not using AW, sorry, if I'm not using Azure, let's say I have my own CI/CD pipeline with GitHub or GitLab or whatever, can I make independent part of that so that, I've got some unit tests, I've got some static analysis, can I have an independent analysis as part of that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's the build machine SKU or edition. And the Bean Machine Edition is just console, actually console application, okay, with a various option. And this console would put an HTML plus JavaScript report, okay, and it's a pretty complete report with a lot of browsable information, and we have documentation and even plugin, for example, for TeamCity, or documentation to integrate it in most of the CI process you use nowadays, including like Jenkins, TeamCity. We also have a SonarQube extension to import the NDPN issues into SonarQube. Okay, so all these things are provided, and there is a complete documentation about it.
What would be an example of something that I might decide to fail a pipeline for that NDepend would tell me about? So, you know, if I fail a unit test, I'll fail a pipeline. If SonarQube spots some very bad coding practice, I might fail a pipeline. What does NDepend look for?
Yeah, sure. So there is a, I mentioned the rule system, right? And there is also a pass-fail criterion. So we call it like quality gates. I think in Sonar they call it the same. So the concept of quality gates, so today it's well adopted in the software industry and also most industry. So basically a quality gate, it's if the quality criteria is not met, okay, we fail. And in the software product, it's we are failing the build. So here, let's be concrete. So for example, a quality gate can be a certain amount of code coverage, or even better, I think to me, it's a certain amount of code coverage on new code written since the baseline, because I mentioned NDepend knows about as a baseline system. Okay, so you can have a baseline and say, I want like 80% code coverage on new classes written. And maybe I can say I want 70% of code coverage on refactor code, for example. You can do the distinction of refactored and new code, like new classes or new method. Or you don't want, for example, issue with a certain severity, like a critical or more or blocker severity, for example. So there is this quality gate. And what's very interesting is that the quality gates are also written with the code query. The code query system I already mentioned. So here again, the same way, so we can really easily not only write a quality gate about pretty much anything you can imagine, but it's also very easy to customize the built-in quality gates because it's just modifying a code query, a link query.
If I'm using NDepend in my CI/CD pipeline, will this work with Linux containers that are running my pipeline, or do I have to use Windows as my pipeline?
So, yeah, the interesting question. So, for now, we only support Windows. Basically, now we support Windows, and we have planned in the midterm, so that's hard to be very accurate, but I hope that in the 2 years, at least the analysis, maybe let's say between 18 and 24 months, is we can have the analysis outside Windows, like on Linux or Mac. So especially with all the .NET Core things nowadays, more and more .NET developers are not only running on Windows. So this is important for us to be where they are.
Let's come back to the NDepend extension that's part of Visual Studio. I know over the last few years, Microsoft had been changing how extensions work within Visual Studio. Has that affected you for 2017 or more so for 2019?
So, yes, so we can deny that Microsoft is doing a lot of evolution, both to the .NET platform and also to the Visual Studio platform. So if you're into the extension business, or if you're using one or several extensions and you are interested, you can hear a lot of extension provider. You know, it's a very small community, like in the extension, we kind of know each other. So sometimes some are complaining, and I understand why, because nowadays with all these changes, it's hard to find a lot to find time to really add new feature. Okay, so also it depends on the extension. Some extension are more impacted by than others. But yes, we can say that all these changing have a large impact on the extension community. So personally, I find it interesting that .NET is becoming so mainstream and is evolving so quickly. Okay, so I think in our team, we think it's important to be where our users are, and also to be there where they will be. Okay, so I think it's interesting to follow the all these changes. Plus, it's also a bonus because all this investment into .NET that Microsoft is doing is good for all the people that are revolving around the .NET community like us. So I don't really complain. Even though it's pretty hard. So, for example, some major changes that happened with just before Visual Studio 2019 is that now extension have deferred loading are loading in a deferred way. Okay, so basically, when you start Visual Studio, extension can be loaded a bit after. Okay, so the reason why is easy. Is that Microsoft get a lot of complaint about the startup time of Visual Studio. Okay, and nowadays Visual Studio 2019 is very, very fast to start. And if some extension are slowing it down, I understand Microsoft to know they don't want to be blamed for that. Okay, so hopefully all the optimization work we've done with NDPEN is really, really not slowing down Visual Studio on a decent nowadays machine. Right, so that one we get it pretty right. So another thing interesting is that Visual Studio 2019 get a new option. I'm not sure how many developers knows about it, but it has a major impact on the extension community. It's about the option name is optimized rendering for screen with different pixel density. Okay. And if you get this option activated, only if you are running .NET framework 4.8, okay, then you will see a lot of extension user interface having a lot of problem. Okay, so on this one, I'm a bit disappointed because I didn't mention that considering the deferred loading, Microsoft did an awesome job of telling the community, like I think it was like more than 18 months upfront. Hey, we're gonna do these changes, so we're gonna help you do this changing. So that was really perfect in terms of timing, and there were no bad surprises. But with this new feature, which is pretty interesting, I perfectly understand that, and I do actually have several screen with different pixel densities. Okay, it was just there. It was just there in the very late beta of Visual Studio 2019. So basically, all the extension people, NDPEN included, but I can also mention ReSharper, for example. Hey, we get a big surprise, and it's pretty hard. It's really not easy, despite all the good help from Microsoft. It was not an easy way to fix. So I can announce that this week we get it totally right, and for the user who complained this week, I think hopefully Wednesday we release the version of NDPEN that totally fixed all the little glitches you can have. Okay. And one interesting point is that even when you started with Visual Studio 2019 with ReSharper, since they know, like us, they have problems, you get a dialogue that prompts you. ReSharper is telling you, hey, ReSharper is going to have problem in this mode. Do you want to disable this mode and start again Visual Studio? So that's pretty interesting way to approach this thing. But I'm sure, like us, soon we'll get a ReSharper version with everything fixed. But I'm sure that all the other extensions have quite a lot of problems because this is really a UI revolution in terms of WPF and reform. Okay, and finally, another last point concerning extension is that, and here also I have to say that it was really a big surprise for everybody. So someone at Microsoft decided that extensions, all extensions, not only NZPN, WeShopper, whatever, extension are second zone features. And so all the extension menus are under the new Visual Studio 2019 extensions menu, main menu, I mean, the menu you get at the top of your Windows. Okay, and here also that there is a thread on the web where there is a lot of complaint, tons of complaint, and we can imagine why, because really people, really developer really don't like we change to change the way they are working. And for example, suppose you are someone that is using daily, let's say like NZPN or WeShopper. So now you can use the keyboard for many features, but also a lot of developers are also using the main menu. And now this totally changes the way they are working, because now they have an extra click and in terms of cognitive way, that's pretty hard to accept to have an extra click for feature you used to have very, very quickly. So that's interesting that someone published an extension, okay, that when you install it to Visual Studio 2019, you get the ability to have a Visual Studio extension like NZPN, WeShopper, whatever, to get the menu back into the main team, so that quiet down a bit the community. Personally, I really hope that Microsoft is going to reconsider this position. So let's have some hopes and see what will happen.
What about VS Code? Do you provide an extension for that one?
So no, not for now, because it's hard to extend VS Code the way we are doing it with Visual Studio. Okay, the underlying technology is totally different. So for now, we're not extending VS Code. This is something that might become possible in the future, but we don't have a precise plan. But I believe, from my understanding of the community, personally, I might be wrong, but from what I understand is that professional .NET developer, the guy that is working in a smaller or larger company, is still using Visual Studio. Okay, I mean, most of them are still using Visual Studio, and VS Code, since it's very light, and that's pretty cool, the same way as Rider, okay, from JetBrains, they are lighter weight IDE for .NET developers that are also available cross-platform, okay, available and also on Unix and Mac. And so for now, the kind of user we have, our clients, at least from the poll we're doing on them, most of them are still using Visual Studio because they have a large legacy, okay, and they need all the Visual Studio goodies features that are there. But this situation might evolve, and once again, we need and want to be where our user want to be.
There are a lot of changes coming to .NET. So .NET 4 is going to end, you know, at 4.8. I don't mean it's going to be the end of it, but there's going to be no 4.9 or 4.8.1 or whatever it happens to be. There'll be security patches. .NET Core 3 is coming in the autumn, and then .NET 5 is coming a year later. How's all that going to affect you and NZPN?
So that's very exciting and exciting situation. First, developer and also us, people that are doing extension for .NET developers, sooner or later we only have one .NET, because .NET 5 to be released in November 2020. Okay, will be a way to unify all .NET. Okay, including the people And there are a lot of .NET developers that are still using WPF and WinForm. Okay, and this one is now supported by .NET 3. Okay, so .NET, what they say, .NET 4 will unify .NET. And this is pretty interesting for anyone, because everyone in the .NET community, since there won't be any more the question like which platform should we choose, okay, which can generate a lot of debate. Okay, so concerning detail, so of course we'll be there, definitely. We don't want end-to-end to end. So of course we'll be there. We will try to be there as soon as possible. But it will really depend on of the kind of preview that Microsoft will be willing to propose to the community. Okay, so we will we'll follow very carefully all the preview. And that's interesting to note that for the one that followed .NET Core in the past, we saw major changes during the preview. Like, for example, at a point, it was a question to not have any more the CS project, the XML CS project, but JSON project. But finally, that was not the case, even though they were quite hard on this kind of project. Okay, so we can expect a lot of changes during the preview. Okay, and also there are questions about .NET standard. Okay, as far as I know, there is not .NET standard has not really be updated with .NET Core 3. Or I googled a lot of for it, but didn't find anything. Anything accurate, so I'm not sure what will happen to .NET standard with the, for example, I don't think we can expect that all the WPF and WinForm API will be in .NET standard at a point. Okay, but we don't have much information about it. So I understand that some people can complain because .NET standard was really a great initiative to support many kind of platform like Xamarin or Linux or Windows or whatever. But isn't .NET standard be wiped out by the .NET 5 idea of having one unified .NET? So on this question, we don't have many information from Microsoft, so it's a wait and see.
I think I heard something on this recently, but I'm not certain, so when you hear me say it, don't take my word for it, check it yourself. I believe .NET standard is largely going away except for sharing code between 4 and 5 when that time comes. But standard won't be of use within 5 is my understanding.
Okay, so the .NET 5 API will be de facto standard, I guess. So we have to wait for that. There is something leaking, and we can see on the net a lot of guys complaining, is that with all these .NET Core things move, Microsoft didn't really provide a cross-platform user interface framework, right? So I understand that WinForm is not going to be cross-platform because it's purely Win32. So I understand how hard it could be to migrate it to another operating system than Windows. But I'm a bit surprised that Microsoft is not considering the WPF on other platforms, since it's a much more modern framework. So, and also they don't propose other framework to be cross-platform. So on this one, I don't really know what will happen, but certainly there is when you see all the people complaining on the web, you can expect that maybe something will happen one day. But I don't know if you have information, but I don't on this. And one very important question is, at least for extension the extension community, both the extension provider and user, is will Visual Studio run on .NET 5? Okay, So that's pretty important also, because this raised question, like, will Windows provide de facto, how long will .NET 4 be provided by Windows 10, or mean future version of Windows 10, for example? Will a .NET 5 version will be provided in Windows 10? Okay, so at a point, and since .NET 5 is here to be the future, it definitely makes sense to ask the question, will Visual Studio run on .NET 5? So my own two cents is that it will happen, but not with the next version, assuming that the next version will be in 2 years, since we can see that the Visual Studio platform is entering a two-year cycle. Okay, there have been like 2015, 2017, now it's 2019. So maybe certainly we can expect a 2021, okay, for what they would call like Dev 17, okay, since Visual Studio 2019 is Dev 16, okay. So my guess is that they won't do that for several reasons. First, if .NET 5 RTM is released in November 2020, this will be quite a short time to move, because we can expect that preview will change a lot during next year, 2020. Okay. Second, Visual Studio is really a big, big, big beast. Okay. And for example, there is still a lot of COM inside, a lot of COM. And we can see that, for example, there is a recurring demand. I think it's still the top one, number one demand from user, is that Visual Studio is not 64 process. Okay, if you look at it, it's still 31. So you are limited to the 1.4 gigabyte on nowadays machine. That's hard to believe. Like, we all get tons of RAM and we're happy with it. But that's hard to see the Visual Studio process, maybe sometime on very large legacy application, it can slow down because of this small. So my guess is that if so far they haven't considered moving to something as a 64, despite all the demand from the community, it means that it's pretty hard to do all these changes. Okay. And so for that reason, we can expect that it won't happen anytime soon. But I might totally be wrong. And the Visual Studio team proved in the past that they can be very agile when they really want. Like, for example, Visual Studio 2010 interface ran on WPF. It was quite a lot of changes. Okay, then after they introduced Roslyn, with Visual Studio 2015, and this has been also major changes. Okay, and actually I have to say my opinion is that we had to wait Visual Studio 2017 to be very fluent with all the Roslyn things, like all the analyzer, the compiler and things. Okay, because 2015 was kind of slow, and they fixed a lot of things in Visual Studio 2017. But nonetheless, they really showed some extreme capacity to modify all the legacy when they really needed to. So it will be very exciting to see what will happen. And this joined my point on the cross-platform UI. Okay, is that if they wanted, I would mean Microsoft. I would be glad to do only one Visual Studio, because now they have a Visual Studio for Mac, which is not really Visual Studio. Okay. And I would be Microsoft. I would be glad to have, considering we have the light VS Code and the more heavy Visual Studio, I would be glad to do all my effort to be available on all platforms. Okay. So, but for that, the WPF is not running on other platforms than Windows nowadays. So that's also another point to take account. Like, if they do all this move on Visual Studio, okay, will they want to run on the platform? So all this is very interesting perspective. So of course we'll see what will happen, but this is I find this very very interesting.
What's next for you in Independ, let's say over the next 6 months, year?
So we talked about things like VS Code support or other platform support, at least for the analysis side. Okay, our since Independ is not based on Roslyn, okay, we are not really the Independ issues are not really visible from the Visual Studio Code editor. Okay, and nowadays I understand that user and us also are used to have some Roslyn issue inside the code editor itself. Okay, so this is something we really want to and need to have. Okay, as the name suggests, Independ is also very strong with dependency, and we get a long list of potential improvement for all this navigation and code structure things. So we need and want to work on this. Okay. There is also question about stability to dependency, about dependency injection. Okay, so today's dependency injection is mainstream. With there are many framework available for .NET developers. Okay, and it's interesting to note that most of tool, I'm not sure if there is even a single tool that we understand most of dependency injection framework. And we get feedback from user like we want Independ to understand our DI process, because we want Independ to understand that this code is not just using the interface, but is also using the code behind, okay, the implementation. So we have work for that. But also we recently concerning the DI things, we just, I mean, with the next version, we did some work on that. Like there are some rules that want to understand dependency injection. For example, Independ is able to spot classes not instantiated. Okay, and this rule, I mean, the constructor is not called anywhere. And of course, it's reporting false positive for classes that are used only through DI process, because these classes are never seen in a static way. These classes constructor is never called. Okay, so we have some less false positive for that. And just a little discretion, false positive is really the number one target for, I guess, for all the rule system, the static rule system. Because we can spot a lot of issues in a sufficiently large enough code base, okay? But the important point is to not report false positive or as much as possible, because this can discourage user, okay, to use the tool. And one very important point, I mean, Independ has two important features also for that, except about all the effort we are doing to improve the rule system to have less and less and less false positive for many years. So first, Independ has a wall. I mean, there are some default query, we call them not my code query, that are matching code that is typically generated. Okay, because typically user don't want issue reported on such code, because most of the time they're not able to modify it. Okay, so all issue on generated code can be considered as false positive. And the tricky part is to properly identify generated code with all the framework available and the various possibilities. So we work a lot on that, and we worked a lot and we'll work a lot on that as well. And second, another very interesting thing concerning issues is that you should focus on new issues introduced since the baseline. Okay. And since I repeat again myself, is that Independ knows well about the baseline. Independ is also able to detect new issues since the baseline, and also fixed issues since the baseline. And all the UI show well that the user should focus on this one. Okay, and so this way, more and the priority goes to fix new issues introduced, okay? Because it means that code refactored and added has new problem, and since it's fresh into the mind of developers of the team, this code is still fresh, so it's interesting to fix first this issue. That's the right approach to code quality. Okay, so of course, iteration after iteration, there will be less and less issues, or at least there will be less and less issues on a new code that is typically error-prone code, right? We typically, most of the problem you get in production comes from refactor code and new code, because you're supposed to fix bug before adding new feature. So the legacy code is supposed to have not so many bugs. At least that's the theory, but I hope that nowadays most of people are fixing bug before adding new feature. So when you're adding new feature, that's here where you really want to have very high quality to avoid delivering bugs in production.
Any final notes before we wrap up for the day, Patrick?
I think we covered quite a lot of things. So definitely the future is bright for the .NET community. And definitely the future will be quite hard for all the people that are developing tooling for .NET developers, because a lot of change will happen. A lot of paradigms are evolving. And this is a very exciting time. And we'll definitely want with Independ to be there. And so if you are the Independ user, be sure that we will be where you will be.
Patrick Smakia, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome, Brian.
If you liked this episode, you might also like episode 74, my first one with Patrick, or episode 124 with Mads Torgerson about C# 8, or episode 123 with Dane Hillard about good software practices. The opening music was a return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Taming the Riff by Roe from the album Brace for Gravity.